This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
Joni Webb with Code to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming best-selling author of 20 design books and contributing writer to many, many publications, Diane Doran Sakes, who's got the wonderful blog, The Style Salonist. So, Diane, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
Thank you, Linda, and thank you, Megan, and thank you, Joni. It's a wonderful time to speak to you, and I'm very honored, and I'm thrilled to be speaking to you after reading all of your blogs for the last 2 years and learning so much from them. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I think we're all, as bloggers, you know, we work on our writing, and so to be able to talk to someone who, you know, that's you. You know, we look up to you and people like you for your ability to really, in words, describe such a visual medium. So as we do with all of our guests, we want to hear, and our listeners always want to hear, you know, about your background, where you're from, education. Start at the beginning.
Right. So my family is from London, and my grandfather and my father bought a property in New Zealand, the Antipodes, and we went out to New Zealand, which was, you know, of course, on the other side of the world, very remote, and I had a wonderful childhood in Arcadia, basically out in the country. My father was not a farmer, but we lived in the country and had the most wonderful farm and orchards and trees to climb and fresh vegetables and fresh everything and a river to swim in and fresh watercress on the riverbank that we would make into salads. And I had the kind of life that many people would aspire to today, I think, in California. And we had a very interesting life. My mother was involved in culture in New Zealand. She was an opera singer and she had a French voice coach, and I, of course, always thought that French was the best of everything possible. So I was in heaven, and we were surrounded by interesting, talented people. And groups like the Royal Ballet would come through town, and musical groups. And my mother sang, and I learned to play the piano and studied ballet and so on. And in retrospect, I thought it was a normal childhood until I had a girlfriend come out once to stay on the weekend when I was in high school, and we were talking about our garden or something, the flower garden and something, and she said, "Oh, well, we don't have a garden." And I said, "Well, how do your parents feed the children?" And I thought this was the worst thing I'd ever heard. I assumed that everybody grew their own organic vegetables and had a lovely life and books and read Vogue and read Harper's Bazaar. And so anyway, I've been a writer my whole life. My grandfather gave me a notebook when I was 5, a leather-bound notebook, and which gave it some importance. And I looked up tremendously to my grandparents and my parents, and they always encouraged me in everything I was interested in. And I think that's the key to where I am today, sitting here in San Francisco, writing books, being an editor, writing my blog, and enjoying all of it. And I think someone had asked me recently why I wasn't nervous when I was speaking in public and when I was teaching a seminar or speaking about design. And I remembered that my father encouraged me when I was in high school how to speak in public and how to be a good speaker. So I think parental encouragement and parental enjoyment of everything I did was kind of fantastic. And then so I started editing a children's magazine when I was about 13. Then I did that on my school holidays and on weekends. And then when I was 16, my father, such a handsome, wonderful man, took me to see the editor of the major local newspaper and sat down with me and introduced me to the editor and said that I was interested in becoming a writer. And that I was going to college. And the editor said, "Well, don't bother going to college." He said, "You'll come here and you won't be able to type and you'll be useless to us." And I said, "Oh, well, then I'll learn to type." So my mother sent me to a typing school in the evening and I learned to type. And I worked for the newspaper on my weekends as sort of an assistant to various editors, learned all of that. And then I must say, though, here I was living in this very idyllic place with a very lovely family and a wonderful life, and always aware when I read Vogue or Bazaar that where I really wanted to be was living on the Upper East Side, reading Vogue, playing in Central Park, going to the Metropolitan Museum, going to the Museum of Modern Art, seeing art galleries, seeing ballet, seeing, you know, going to the Metropolitan Opera. So here I was, happily living in New Zealand, but longing to be in New York, actually, or anywhere but New Zealand's. So remote, so very remote. I wanted to be in Paris. I studied French, of course, in high school. I studied Latin. I studied German. I studied Russian, all of which I had fantastic teachers. And I studied Latin for 6 years, actually. And I think, in a way that I've never read any scientist say, I think reading all of those languages, if you were going to ask me why is my writing at this point somewhat occasionally quite good, I would say because I had this language background, and I think it gave me a structure to my brain that I can formulate sentences and understand words. Also, if you've studied Latin, you know, you understand words and can somehow put them together. I think that's part of it. And so, but I would say that New Zealand gave me a fantastic education, a classical education. I had a very indulgent headmistress of my school. I was allowed to take extra art classes. I was allowed to take extra studies. I had a French tutor. I had a fantastic piano teacher whose name was Maisie Kilkelly. And I was exposed to a lot through my parents. So already that was the kind of groundwork I did. Then when I was in college, I worked at a magazine. Then at a certain point, I met a very handsome guy that I fell in love with, and I moved to Sydney spontaneously and immediately got a job at House and Garden based on the clips and my existing work. So I completed college there, stayed for a year, and then went to live in London, worked at magazines in London, went to live in Paris, worked at magazines there, went to live in Athens in Greece, worked for a newspaper there called Athens News. So I've also traveled. I've always been traveling, went back to Sydney, went to New York, went to Washington, D.C., which sounds peripatetic at best. But anyway, it's given me a fantastic background for writing about design. So I've always written about design. I've always had style and design and as my focus. I've always interviewed interesting people, passionate about everything. That's the key. Study Latin and be passionate.
So with all that travel around, did you spend much time in New York City after all the dreams of...
I did, actually. And I worked there, you know, I was one of the founders of the late, great Metropolitan Home, which was great at that time. And I persuaded Dorothy Kalin, the editor-in-chief, to let me come and work there in the summer. So I'd work there in the summer and produce stories. And I kind of created my dream, actually. And I do work there quite often. And, you know, of course, my publisher, Rizzoli, is in New York as well. So I'm in and out of New York as often as I can. I adore New York. I probably should be living there. I don't. I live in San Francisco, which I love also.
And what finally brought you to San Francisco?
I was married and we came out here on a vacation and we both said we should live here. This is really inspiring and healthy and people well-educated and people really interesting and doing interesting things. And it had a feeling of ideas and open-mindedness and creativity, but that you could still be out in the, you know, in the open air.
How long have you lived there?
Oh, I've lived here for ages. I always thought I would stay here briefly and go to New York or go to Paris. And every so often I think I should be living in Paris because now, you know, you really can be living anywhere and doing what you're doing. I could be in Paris and, you know, be the style salonist probably. And I'd probably have more readers because everybody likes everything French.
I was going to say, who doesn't sometimes think I should be living in Paris?
I know.
Have those moments.
Truly. Well, I'm very happy in Paris and I'm very much at home. When I'm in Paris, I'm working and seeing my friends as if I lived there. It's just, you know, I go to the grocery, go and buy bread, go and buy, you know, detergent, whatever, and live there like like a resident, actually, and I think that's the key to it. I feel connected to it. I'm very connected to daily life there as well.
Do you have an apartment there?
I have a friend's apartment. That's even better.
That is even better.
Very lucky. Yes, yeah. I had an apartment. Now I have a friend's apartment.
Diane, you have written over 20 design books, and some of them are the most, you know, famous or popular ones out there, especially the Michael Smith book. How did that come about?
So that book has been phenomenally successful. It's gone into its 8th printing, which is really off the charts. And I was riding around L.A. with Charles Myers, the publisher of Rizzoli, and we came to a stop. We were actually going to have lunch with Hutton Wilkinson. It was a wonderful day. And we stopped at a light, and Charles tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, well, who do you think would be the next designer to write about? Is there anybody in L.A.? And I said, oh, Michael Smith, absolutely. We should do a book about him. He said, oh, you know, tell me about him. And I told him how great Michael was. I've known him since he was a tot almost, and since he, in fact, he was first starting. And he's always been fantastic, always been amazing, and has a body of work that's phenomenal, and has been published a lot, and is very well known, but also is very talky. He's extremely articulate and bright and funny. And so I told Charles all of that, and he said, I'll gather some things up and send them in. So we did the book, and it came out, and then obviously it's had these sort of waves of popularity. It's always, everywhere I go, it's always there. And I can be in the most remote place, and in Paris included, and the book is there. It's one of those beautiful books that just has a presence and a life. And Michael's work is fantastic. And then, of course, the Obama family hired him to design their interiors. And he had fame and popularity beyond anything you can imagine, which I think he handled incredibly well. Obviously, he wasn't able to talk about it and wasn't able to say anything. So he's been very discreet and has basically gone on with all of the other projects. He has many clients that he's worked for many, many years.
You're still in touch with him?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think we'll ever see any pictures out of the White House, or...?
He's, you know, it's somewhat out of his hands, I must say, but I think it's very likely that we will. I think he's already thinking that they'll probably have two terms in the White House. And
I hope so.
Right. I think that's Michael's studio anticipating that, and let's hope they do. And then, so he's thinking it's not going to be immediate, that perhaps after 8 years it might be possible, but I think in this current climate, and actually in the permanent climate, I think a discreet person, a discreet president, does not present their interior. It just creates so much confusion and puzzlement and controversy among
But wouldn't you love to see what is going on in there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm dying to see it.
No, Michael's so great at placing art and selecting art, so I think I'm sure it looks charming and interesting and very appropriate as well.
I heard there's some hand-painted chinoiserie wallpaper in a room. Do you know which room it's in? Is it the bedroom? Or?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was the dining room, because he does like to do that and has often done it, and he does it beautifully. So possibly, I must say, even to friends, he's been in very totally discreet as he should be.
Do you have, with all these contacts and these people that, you know, are your friends because of your work and everything, do you have one of these designers work for you? I mean, have they done your own home, or what is your own home like? Do you do
my
your own?
Apartment is white and ivory, with some fantastic antique chairs, a lot of art, and rooms full of books, bookcases spilling out with books. I have major book collecting passion. So the books have been collecting for many years, and now they're spilling out onto the floor of the living room, which I love. I have some John Dickinson pieces, plaster table, the major plaster table, some other things that John had given me years ago, prints that John had given me, and imagery. Very good photography.
Has your apartment been published?
Yeah. No, never.
So we can't go online and start Googling you.
You'll never find
doing a little stealth.
It's important for me to have some anonymity regarding the design, because some years ago, a designer said to me, oh, I hear that you like white. You like white rooms. Perhaps I should do white rooms. And it's a mistake, you know, that people think that my own apartment is my professional taste. Mm-hmm. I have personal taste, but my professional taste is something else. And my professional taste is extremely broad. And it's a professional eye on things. It's a discerning eye. It's not about my personal thought at all.
I think Margaret Russell sort of, don't you think that that's what she was sort of explaining when we asked her a similar question?
Yeah, she wasn't showing her apartment anytime soon.
No, it's a mistake. It's a serious mistake. And I think people judge design people by their cars or their clothes or their shoes or their jewelry or their apartment. And I stay away from all of that.
Speaking of traveling, you wrote about this fabulous trip you took to India, and I was so in awe of you. You went by yourself, right?
Always. The biggest luxury is to travel alone, and then you can experience everything directly. I meet fabulous people, and I never has to worry if my friend is tired or whether they're bored or whether they're sick or whether they want to go home. I can be myself and experience things very directly. I can dive in to everything, never thinking, is my friend going to like it? I prefer it. I love traveling alone. I love getting on a plane alone. It's the greatest luxury.
But it's scary to go to India alone.
No. I have friends everywhere. And I have, I have friends in Paris. I have friends in Delhi. I have friends in Jaipur where I stay. And so I'm always seeing them and I spend time with them. But I just don't want to be with someone all the time. I love being in a hotel alone. I adore it. And I love traveling alone. And, and honestly, Joni, think about this. To get to New Delhi from San Francisco, I always fly Lufthansa. Lufthansa, San Francisco, Munich, Delhi. I sleep all the way. I arrive feeling fresh. I land there and I'm ready to go. And I'm absolutely not afraid of anything. Mm. It's not scary at all. The people are fantastic. But I travel everywhere alone. I go to Stockholm, go to Antwerp. I'm going to Antwerp next week, South America, wherever. And it's the most interesting thing is to travel alone, because I'm very interested in certain things. I'm interested in design. I'm interested in architecture. I'm interested in certain things. And I have some dear friends in San Francisco who are equally crazily passionate about it.
What are your plans in Belgium? Is it design?
I'm going to see Axel Vervoort, actually. And I'm looking forward to that tremendously and see what's new. And I'm actually hoping that I might have time to go and see Jacques Vertz. I want to do a story on Jacques Vertz. And I've been to his house already and seen many of his gardens. And they're just so exquisite and so individual. So I'm hoping to do that. There's a fantastic exhibit of Givenchy at a chateau about 2 hours southeast of Paris called Chateau de Arouet. It's a 17th century chateau. So I'll go out there by myself on the train. And, I've always done that. I went to see Caronce once, and you go out on the train and you land at the train station and you think, what now? And, a taxi comes along or someone comes along and offers you a ride. And you go 35 miles out into the countryside and see the most exquisite chateau ever. So I've got Arouet. I've got lots of plans of things to do.
What about writing? What's in the future? Any books in the immediate future?
Two projects in the works now with Rizzoli. My publisher won't let me talk about them yet, but they'll both be things that you'll like very much, both design-related and both different but fantastic and very exciting. So you'll hear about it from Rizzoli eventually.
Do you have a rough publishing date? Like a year, 2011? You know,
we're now into 2011 and 2012, which is just around the corner in publishing. It sounds so far away, but that's where we're at right now.
So are you, so does your, do your days, are they spent writing, or do you have your days that you write, or are you very regimented in your work?
Mostly writing. So the computer is turned on about 8:30 in the morning and turned off at 11:30 at night. And I'm not at the computer every moment. I may go to the gym, or I may go for a walk with a friend, but, or I may go to a meeting, but I'm writing a lot and I really like it. And I love doing it at night, especially when the phone's not ringing and nothing's happening and it's very quiet outside. And so sometimes I have to force myself to go to bed at midnight because I'm just getting started, really. It's my greatest pleasure. But I also love interviewing people. I love seeing people. I love seeing design, every aspect of design, traveling to look at design, traveling to Venice to, you know, go and look at Palladian villas, going to Sweden to look at Gustavian interiors, going to Russia to St. Petersburg to see late 18th century interiors and Hermitage and all of the Catherine palaces. That's really the most exciting thing. And then to write about them is tremendously exciting.
When you go to a, you know, Russia and you're looking at the Catherine palaces or wherever, do you, what is your process, if, particularly if it's a, if it's a new place to you? Do you walk around, take notes, take lots of pictures?
You know, Michael, I interviewed Michael Kors recently, and I was asking him sort of some straight questions, and I said to him, what's, he's traveling constantly, and I said to him, what is your secret of traveling well? And I thought he was going to say something like, take a cashmere throw, or, you know, be, get fantastic earplugs. And he, and in fact, he said, do fantastic research before you leave. And that's what I do. I read everything I have. I have an enormous research library at home. So I read everything. I ask all of my friends, which was another tip Michael Kors said, ask your friends for tips on restaurants and so on. So I heard about a fantastic guide in Russia, for example, a woman called Olga Bychek, who's become a great friend, and she's guided me in St. Petersburg three times. She's a fantastic, fantastic guide. If anybody needs a guide in St. Petersburg, send me a message through my, through the Style Salonese, and I'll refer you to her. She's great. So going to Paris, I'll read all the current magazines. I'll look through everything. But I also constantly keep files, and I recommend this to any designer or anybody who's traveling. So when I'm, I know, for example, that I'm going to India in November. So already I'm collecting a file of new things to do, people to see, things I should follow up on. And some of them I will have contacted by the time I get there and I have an appointment to see them. So I do the research ahead of time. I know everything I want to see and what I want to focus on. I focus on specific things, and I've got a lot of old books on Russia, for example, and I'll find something like Catherine's Agate Pavilion, which I saw in a book years ago, a black and white picture, and I wasn't even sure if it was still there, but it looked fantastic. So I said to, oh, I sent a list of things to the guide in St. Petersburg, and I said, I'd like to do this, this, and this, and this. I want to see the Chinese Pavilion. I want to see Mont Plaisir and so on. And I thought, oh, she's going to write back and say that fell down years ago and that isn't open anymore and you can't see that and so on. I arrived in St. Petersburg. She said, I've arranged to do every single thing you asked for.
Wow.
So for Paris, I'm constantly tearing things out of magazines, looking at guidebooks, finding things online, new restaurants, new places. I already have done all my research on places to see. And recently I was in New York. And, of course, I read the New York Times every week and the New Yorker, and I was avidly following every museum show, every concert, every program, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say the best thing to make travel rich and make it worthwhile and passionately, wonderfully exciting is to be reading constantly and creating files and doing research.
You have a fabulous blog. You do a lot of interviews, and I know that you're very opinionated about blogging and, you know, what you think makes up a good blog and what doesn't and what you like to see. And I hear you a lot. I hear you, Diane, when I'm writing a lot of times. Because
Oh, thank you. You
were the first one that really put in my mind about original content, you know.
Right.
And so now I really always try. It's hard.
Oh, thank you. That's such a compliment. And you, after you and I had discussed this, you did the most fantastic blog ever about your daughter Elizabeth's bedroom. It was your greatest blog. It was all original material. It was personal. It was private. It was fantastic design. Best blog ever. And since then, you've had fantastic blogs.
Well, I hear you now, and it's true. I wish I had more original content, but I think even if you just add a sentence about your personal opinion of whatever you're talking about, it changes it. So anyway, I want to hear what you have to say about blogging today.
So let me say I'm celebrating 1 year anniversary of the Style Salon East, which is quite exciting. And I started, and I must say, Grant was very helpful to me when I was getting started with some of the nits and grits and the basics he'd already figured out. And so he was very encouraging at the beginning, but I'd spent probably a year before that thinking it through. What did I want my blog to be? What was it going to look like? What did I want it to be? What did I not want it to be? So I came up with the idea, and then basically one day it had to be launched. We had to do it. I had the logo, I had the idea, I had stories, and so we just had to not hesitate anymore. I think you can overthink it because you learn, and I would say to anybody who's listening who has an idea for a blog and who hasn't yet done it, I would say jump into it, leap into it. You must do that. You can't hesitate because you can only learn by doing it. So after about a week or two or three, my blog was up running and I was getting some confidence. I went to a party where I was signing books and I was sitting at the table signing books and everyone was gathered around and everybody was very cheerful and happy. And suddenly across the table, someone leaned over and said, "Your blog is too long." And I was absolutely startled. He said, "Blogs are supposed to be short."
Ugh.
And I thought, oh my God, I've made a mistake here. And so I spent some time thinking about it. And at first I was startled because I thought maybe I was off base and maybe blogs really should be very short. And I realized that in reality, my form is long form. I'm a feature writer. I write books. I write long articles. I'm not a person who's going to be saying, "Look, here's a picture of my cat. Make a comment. Well, what do you think of this picture?" That's not my style at all. I like writing. But, you know, a blogger has to have the courage of their own conviction. They have to have a sense of themselves and they have to be confident about what they're doing, because in the end, I now have readers all around the world, and I have people sending messages from Moscow or Peru or Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Belgium. I'm very big in Belgium or from Canada. I'm huge in Canada. I have lots of Canadian readers. And Joni, I must say, thanks to you, I have great, great number of readers in Texas. And Joni, I must say, Cote de Texas is the largest source of new readers for me as well.
Oh,
I've checked it. It's great, isn't it? I've checked it on my traffic counter, and mm-hmm. Cote de Texas pops up very often, very, very often, the most often. So that's fantastic. Isn't it great? Well, your blog is magnificent. It's the blog of all blogs, really. It's how a blog should be. I've always thought that. Mine is mine and yours is yours, and Linda's is a certain way and is fantastic, and Megan's also is your voice and your style and your presentation, each one of them completely different. Grant Gibson's is very different and it expresses him, and all of the people in San Francisco, my favorite bloggers like Katie Denham, who's actually in Sacramento, and Tartan Scott also has his own point of view. But I think a blogger has to have that, and they also have to have original material. I'm really bored with people who just take pictures from Elle Decor or Vogue Living without credit and write about it. It's with very little context. It's very boring. It's very uninteresting. And it, to me, screams of plagiarism as well. And even though some of them do have a tiny little infinitesimal credit at the bottom of their blog, which no one's ever going to see, I don't call that crediting. I think crediting has to be generous and sincere and worthy, and it also has to be commensurate with the amount of material that you're taking from that photographer, that stylist, that editor, all of the publications, and just a little tiny credit that, at the bottom that says Elle Decor isn't, for me, doesn't hack it, because I know 20 people worked on that photograph. So let me tell you my favorite blogs, and these are all originals. Obviously, Linda, yours and Joni's and yours, Megan, but there are others I'm very fond of. I love Peak of Chic. I think Jennifer has a voice and her own voice and comes across really well. I happen to know her. She's a friend I met through Grant. Emily Erdman's I like very much. Hers is interesting and fresh and original, has a point of view. She's an historian. Mrs. Blanding's I think is fantastic. She makes the absolute most of where she is and what she does. She's generous and philanthropic. I'm very fond of a Bloomsbury Life. Become great friends. Lisa, I like her very much.
I love her blog too.
Love the blog, and I get lots of traffic also from her blog. So I've written about her, and I like her ideas and her originality and the freshness of it. I do like All the Best also. Rhonda also is based in Glasgow and makes the absolute most of her situation, and I like her focus and her professionalism and her drive as well. I admire very much. I'm very passionate about Little Augury, Patricia Gay Tapp. I give a nod to her. I think she's quirky and fantastically interesting and has her own voice. And the other big surprise was to discover that there are only one or two good design blogs in Los Angeles itself. Minute handful. You'd think there'd be dozens. Lisa told me it's because every writer has an agent and their agent forbids them to write on a blog. So they're not
blogging. Really?
It's bizarre. Actually, you'd think that the blog world would be full of them. I do like Visual Vamp very much, too. I think she's great.
Her husband's very sick right now, in fact.
Oh, really?
Very dear people and very talented, both of them, and very wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I've sent messages for her. I made a decision very early on that I was not going to be much in my blog. It's never going to be me and my boyfriend walking hand in hand in the Tuileries. It just is not. I don't write about my friends. It's about things that I do, and it sounds somewhat personal, and it is somewhat personal, but it's never about my private life. My private life isn't anywhere there. It's not on Facebook. I am on Facebook to publicize the blog, but I personally am not really on Facebook at all. And on the blog, I'm there, but I'm not really there in a personal manner. I'm not boring people with my, you know, aspects of my life that are kind of personal or private. That's not there at all. I think of myself as rather anonymous on the blog. I think people see certain things on it, and that's great, and I love that. And occasionally I'll make a personal or sort of somewhat private comment, but in general, it's not especially it's not at all about my private life.
Mm-hmm.
Diane, if people are, you know, writing blogs, and most bloggers are not writers by training or education. And as you started at the beginning talking about having, you know, multiple language skills, and particularly Latin, but, you know, say someone's now writing a blog and they really feel, you know, they want to work on their writing skills, what would you recommend for people to do that, you know, does involve years of
Latin. Latin. With Miss Stevens and Miss McGahey at Avonside Girls High School, I would say that there are more wonderful writers in the blog world, and especially the design blog world, than you could imagine. I think many bloggers are terrific writers, and they have a voice, they have an attitude, they have a passion, they have a personal voice, and I think that's the key, to be yourself, to write passionately, and to write about what you know, to write about you, what you're the expert of. You're the expert of yourself. You're the expert on the things that you're interested in. You're the expert on the things that you're involved in on a day-to-day basis. I think that's the key, and I think the rest you can tidy up, but I seldom see bad writing, honestly. I don't. I see a lot of very good writing, and I see a lot of very good writing that could be in the New York Times. Honestly, I think I would just hack it out and write it, and write to the best possible. But I think, considering that most designers are not writers, I think they're terrific writers. The other way to make your writing fresh and interesting is take notes when you're at something, possibly write down a snippet of a conversation, like Michael Kors' wonderful quote to that the best trip advice, the best way to travel well is to do a lot of research. I thought was fantastic advice. So I scribble that down and keep it, because I have a very good memory, and I have a photographic memory, but quotes you need to write down. But, you know, I'm also writing all day, and I'm writing with four magazines, and I'm writing books. So I'm not designing all day. So I take off to any blogger who's designing all day and then blogging at night. Wow, that's it's an achievement.
You know, like I think about Toby Fairley. You know, right. She's got this humongous business.
Right.
And she's blogging all the time. Right. And little children. I don't know how she does.
Right. I think the other advice to give to bloggers is to be generous. To be generous to other bloggers. Comment on other blogs. Participate in the scene and be a part of it. And, you know, there's some bloggers who never, ever, ever participate and never comment and have no generosity at all to people who comment on their blogs. And I think not to comment on other people's blogs is rather poor and ungenerous. I think it's necessary to participate as much as possible and as much as you have time, and reciprocate with other bloggers as much as you can. Sometimes for some period of time, I must admit, Joni, you have generally about 195 comments ahead of me. And I think, oh, she's not even going to see my little comment. So, but I do try to do it as much as possible. And I certainly am very encouraging to all of the other bloggers and very appreciative. And I think that's essential. Joni, you had asked me also about plagiarism.
Yes.
And this is something I feel very strongly about, because when I first started researching blogs about 2 years ago, probably, I was shocked at how much they were relying on Vogue or Vogue Italy or Vogue Spain, knowing that Vogue Spain was never going to come after them with a lawyer, or Vogue Australia, or, you know, House and Garden Australia, or any other publication. And there's some blogs that are only, I would say, scanned pictures galore and material that's extrapolated from other publications. And I simply don't admire it, because every one of those photographs, let's say it's a fashion photograph, that photograph has been produced by perhaps 20 professional people, and a blogger plonks it on their blog and says, look, isn't this hair great? Or look at the style, I love that. And as if it was theirs, as if they'd produced it. And they absolutely haven't. And they may or may not credit. But I think that most people can produce more original material than they think they can. But I think they should make more of an effort. And when I see blogs that are just pictures from Elle Decor or House Beautiful or World of Interiors, I don't admire that, quite honestly. I think there are ways of getting photography. You can call a photographer and ask if you can use their photography. But I think also, you know, some editors have said they're ambivalent about it, but you can see that they don't necessarily mind and they like the publicity.
Yes, that's true, because we've asked the editors, and they've been...
and I was surprised by their answers, actually, and they're remarkably lenient, I think, considering, but I think they like to be part of the blog scene, and I understand that, but I think somebody should be saying, wait a moment, credit the photographer, credit the stylist, credit the editor who produced the photography.
Well, there's one thing that's kind of, you know, something that's kind of difficult at this point with blogs being around so long and so many people scanning these photographs and pulling them. You go on sites like Tumblr and Found and all of those things, and there's one called We Heart This or I Heart This or something like that. And it's really hard to track down who the photographer is or who, and I guess in that case you'd probably say, well, just don't use it then. But
I would say use it. I think you should go to primary sources when possible. There may be some photography that I'm interested in, a designer I'm doing a profile on, and I know that a certain photographer has shot their interior. In fact, recently I did a story on Stephen Volpe, and it happens that I had produced a story and directed the photography. So I called the photographer and said, may I use it? I'll absolutely credit you very fully, and I'd also like to run your bio in that. So you'll see at the end of that feature is her bio, and it's, and I specifically say used with permission. So I went to the source to do that, and it was also photography that I'd directed myself. And I like to do that. I wouldn't be looking at secondary or third, tertiary sources at all. I wouldn't, anything that's available to anybody, I wouldn't be very interested in.
Well, yeah. I think it's a tricky subject because, you know, you can go to the magazine then and use images, which we all do. And the magazines don't necessarily have all of the, you know, they may not say who the photographer is. They may not say who the, they certainly never, almost never say who the stylist is.
They do.
On their websites, they very rarely say who they are. When you look up, you know, if you're looking for a, you know, I'm looking for pink rooms, and you do a search on pink rooms, you get, you know, they have a search function. They rarely ever say that. So I think that people are doing the best they can, but, you know, the magazine.
Well, like, what about the vintage photographs? There's a lot of people, you know, Peak of Chic, Mrs. Blandings, who use vintage photographs and not.
Well, Jennifer usually credits, and actually she and I had discussed that. And I see that now that she makes a point to credit the book she got from, the magazine, the photographer, the writer, and all of that has to happen, the name of the publisher. It has to be done very fully and very generously and very much as a credit to a creative person who's created material that you're using and that you're extrapolating. You know, I'm a magazine person and a book person, and so I know what goes into producing all of that photography and directing photography and styling it. Every room that's photographed has about 10 talented people who've worked on that image, and I have great respect for those people. So but I'm also in a position to do that. And
exactly. I totally appreciate what you're saying, and I agree with it from your perspective. I just think there's so many bloggers out there that don't have the access to this knowledge or this experience that you do, and that's, they do it in such an innocent, I think, coming from an innocent place.
Many people, when I was first doing my research, I thought that's what a blog was, that you took a picture from Elle Decor and you wrote some little comment and that was your blog post. Isn't this check rate or whatever. And it wasn't until I came along and found some blogs like Coat de Texas that I saw there was a way of doing it that was very original and much more unique. And that's the key, really. I think every blog has to have a unique point of view. And I really seldom look at any that use a lot of existing material. It's not very interesting to me. I've read Elle Decor. I've seen that picture of Vogue Living. I don't want to see it very much. And I especially don't want to see it without fully crediting all of the people. And I understand why that sometimes doesn't happen. Linda, you would understand that, and I think there are people who don't even know that you should be crediting any source or any picture, any book you're using. I'm scrupulous about it, and I make a point of saying used with permission.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that ever since we had a conversation about plagiarism and originality, I don't think I would ever just show pictures without because people aren't interested in that anymore.
Right.
I think newbies that do just stumble onto a blog today, they are interested, but the majority of people are not interested in just reading something that doesn't have some thought behind it, or some original thought behind it. They're just not anymore. And people are emailing me. There's a big burnout going on behind the scenes, I think.
Well, you mean Estes Lament and De Corno?
Yes, but it's bleeding. It's bleeding, and I don't know whether 3 years is it's settling in for the majority of these 3 years.
Right.
You know, we're going on our fourth year now, and what else is there to say? So
saying and finding fresh things and doing fresh things.
It's hard. It gets harder, don't y'all think?
I think it goes up and down.
Yeah,
I think
it's too.
Like any creative thing. Sometimes you just are in that sort of dull sort of gray space, and then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're excited to do it again, and something's inspired you and you are on a new role.
I think that's life. Right. Some days are kind of foggy and some days are sunny. And I think you have a purpose with the blog, and obviously you've been doing it 3 years. I've only been doing it for 1 year. But it'd be interesting to see some shakeout and some people falling out. And
I was looking at it. There's a lot more that there's been no movement in months.
Yes, right. I see that.
Well, I think
that the problem with blogging is you can't go. Or you're going to lose everything you struggled to gain.
Right.
No matter what's going on in your personal life, unless you're sick in the hospital,
if you
stop, you lose what you worked so hard for,
I guess it depends on, I think a lot of it, because I've talked to designers who are bloggers, so that work is picking up. So we had a recession where we all had a lot more free time on our hands, so the blogging really took center stage. But as work picks up, you got to go to who's paying you, and it's a struggle because you want to maintain your level of quality. Because you're right, Joni, you stop blogging, you go a month, people think you're gone.
It's exciting then to see. I'm waiting to see some really exciting new blogs come along, and some others I like very much. Architect Design in Washington, D.C. I like. I think he's bright and original. There is some Belgian ones. There's Belgian Pearls that I think is.
I love her. Yeah.
We are going to need to wrap this up. It's been really fascinating talking to you and listening to your perspectives, because it's very, obviously coming from a place of great depth and knowledge about everything. This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Cote de Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we were joined by noted writer Diane Doran Sakes. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com. or download our podcasts from iTunes, search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.